This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me in the studio this morning is Philip C. Good morning. It has just gone past 6 in the morning. It's Thursday, or otherwise known as Friday Junior.
Yay,
just one more day.
24 hours left.
Well, it's the 21st of January, and of course, we've got some interesting stories lined up for you. What's up first, Phil?
But before that, I just want to say it's 5 p.m. in Washington, D.C. Uh-huh. We have a new president inaugurated, Joe Biden, replacing some guy. Can't remember his name now.
That was very fast.
What's his name?
Starts with T and ends with a P, but never mind.
Whatever. But we have a really packed show today. But we're going to talk about the science of networking and how the modern economy depends on how well people connect with each other.
Very interesting, especially when you think about it in this post-COVID-19 era, right?
Yes.
Where in the past, networking was like a face-to-face, right? And now, of course, you can't do face-to-face. So does it still exist or has it just evolved, networking? Mm. Well, interesting questions. And then we're going to go back to that man that, you know,
Sorry, can't remember.
Well, we're going to ask whether corporates have kind of evolved or whether they're changing their tune because that person that whom shall not be named has left the White House.
Have they gone woke?
Yeah. Oh, woke. Okay.
Have corporates gone woke?
Maybe, maybe not. We'll find out. But other than that, of course, we're also going to go through some of the international headlines out there. And some of which is that apparently a man who has disappeared has been found again. One of the richest men in the world.
Jolo?
No. That's a good one. I think they're still searching for him, though.
I see.
Yeah, but
you mean Jack Ma?
Yeah. Starts with a J too, but not the same person. As always, get in touch with us via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few minutes. But first, With or Without You, by You Too, keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was With or Without You by You Too. Actually, I'm going to dedicate that to President X Donald Trump, because with or without him, America is still chugging along.
Yeah, that's the beauty of democracy.
It is, isn't it? Once you have the institutions in place, it doesn't really quite matter. Things happen. And I guess, of course, President Joe Biden has a lot of challenges ahead of him. But it's going to be an interesting 4 years, I think, you know, because let's face it, America is facing very challenging times, a health crisis, an economic crisis. And I think the 4 years has also brought a lot of questions into people's minds, which is somewhat related to the article that we're dealing with. And it's from Al Jazeera, which of course is a news agency. And the article is entitled "The Trump Business Backlash: Corporate Woke Washing or New Era."
Before we go to that article, let's just clarify what woke is and what woke washing is.
Yeah.
I suspect many of our listeners may not.
Well,
get it.
To me, these are exactly, they're very, very new terms, right? They just emerged maybe not too long
ago. 6-7 months ago.
Exactly.
I think driven from Black Lives Matter and Me Too.
Yeah.
So woke is a term that was originated in the United States, referring to the ability to be alert to injustice in society, especially racism and sexism.
Yes.
So that's being alert to injustice. And woke washing is when a corporate or institution or individual does something that signals that advocacy for that marginalized cause, but actually is doing harm on other vulnerable communities.
So trying to be the good person, but in the wrong...
Behind you, actually, not loud.
Okay. So, well, is that corporate America guilty of that, though?
I feel two things. Firstly...
Corporate's footstops.
But if you deep dive into America, you see recently, because of all those riots and insurrection, a lot of corporates are now pushing back against Trump and the Republicans.
And this is the recent ones on Capitol Hills, right?
Yes,
It was really a scene of a mini riot going on. Mm. And I think many of us were shocked by the images that this is the bastion of democracy in the US. And what happened to all the police? What happened to the soldiers? And they could just literally march in, right?
Yes. And corporates really acted very fast relative to even the other institutions we were talking about by severing ties with Trump and a lot of the Republican lawmakers that supported or implicitly supported those actions. And so from the surface, it looks really good.
Mm.
But if you peel it a bit further, I do think there's an ulterior motive. If you look forward, there's a Democrat president, you have a Democratic Senate, Democratic Congress. So naturally, of course, I would kind of place my bets and hedge and say, look, it's going to be the Democrats for at least the next 2 years. So might as well just sever all these ties now.
Yeah, it's like quickly, let's leave this sinking ship, right? Mm. I mean, what's the point? I mean, not like President Trump's going to be able to do anything to me. I think this also can be somewhat related to questions over some of these social media platforms, you know, the likes of Twitter, Facebook, that kind of shut down Trump in his very late stages of his presidency.
Why so late?
You know, it's not like he ever, you know, what he tweeted out was so unusual of him or out of character out of him. We saw it for the last 4 years. Basically, American policy was dictated via Twitter. And Twitter. You know what? Face it. Twitter benefited from it. There's no denying it because it drove traffic to Twitter. Everyone knew the word. It became a verb. You know, and there was a lot of attention paid to Twitter.
Correct.
So now, okay, he's on his way out and he sent something where you said, okay, it incited violence. You know, we are not going to encourage this kind of dialogue. And then we shut him down. But like you say, it's towards the very end.
So this deplatforming of Trump really was perhaps a little too late. Even at the last few hours, Twitter was also very careful. They just temporarily suspended, and only after he did another round, they permanently removed him.
But this begs this is like a bigger conversation, right? Because at the end of the day, are we then censoring people, you know, censoring people and then saying, okay, in a way, not allowing this very important thing in America called the freedom of speech, where even though your opinions are not what I agree on, okay, I may disagree with you vehemently on something, but at the same time, are you not entitled to that opinion? Are you not entitled to tell people that opinion of yours? And Twitter is the new village square, right? The new newspaper, the new op-ed column. It is a function of today's society, today's way of reaching out. So are we curbing people unnecessarily?
Interestingly, I'm less worried about Twitter because there's so many other channels that are available. What I find...
Yeah, like Telegram.
But what's more fascinating is that this deplatforming of Trump, which is really deep, is they've gone beyond just the interface, but also the background, like Amazon on the servers with Parler, and with now the financial institutions like Deutsche Bank not funding Trump Organization. It really is a concerted effort by corporates to clearly deplatform that whole position. Whether right or wrong, it shows the immense power they have.
But the questions, of course, will be what is their true intentions, right?
Yes. And I'm personally worried. What are they optimizing for? Are they optimizing for capitalism? Or are they optimizing for injustice?
And or is it just one you can big CSR, like, you know.
Yeah,
like
one big CSR piece, you know, short like a term, PR, 1-2 years.
Yeah, and then we look good. We are like on the right track. We come across as, you know, corporates that really care for society. But at the end of the day, it's all about maximizing shareholder value. And this is part of that maximizing shareholder value exercise.
I really have a question mark about what do these corporates do and the true intentions behind it. It looks good in the short term, but we'll wait to see how that pans out.
Yeah, so let us know what you think. Are corporates really just driven by maximizing shareholder value, or do they care? Care, and that's with the big C. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or of course you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We'd really like to know what you think. Up next, we'll have some messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Human by The Killers. Of course, you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Shaoning and Philip C. It has just gone past 6:18 in the morning. It's a Thursday, the 21st of January, or otherwise known here on The Morning Run as Friday Junior. Just one more day, guys. Hang in there.
So excited.
Although we are still in MCO 2.0. So even though it's a weekend.
It's more than a week though. We've survived MCO.
Yeah. And, you know, yesterday infection numbers, unfortunately, I want to bring home the point that there's still more than 4,000 people who got infected yesterday. So even though it's the weekend, we still have to stay home, stay safe, you know, try not to go out too much unless it's absolutely necessary. And of course, practice all your SOPs. But in the meantime, what's in front of us is this article in The Economist by Bartleby.
Bartleby.
Okay, and it's entitled The Science of Networking. And it interestingly asks a question, or at least poses it to me. The modern economy depends on how well people connect with others. And in this COVID-19 era, which I just said a minute ago, stay at home, don't go out unnecessarily. How then do you network? And how important is it truly? in terms of pushing an economy forward?
This is a really big challenge, especially in COVID. And that's why a lot of people are advocating that eventually when COVID does subside, there is a hybrid model. I do think networking especially affects junior employees or people who are new to an organization. When you come in cold and you don't know people, especially within the company, it's very hard to move and navigate around. So I do think during this COVID period, the more experienced professionals or people who are familiar with the culture of an organization, they get things done relatively fast and love it. But I do think younger, new joiners really struggle simply because they haven't built those quality networks you need to get things done in the company.
Yes, I think on some level I agree with you, but even I think even if you're an older person, and I'll bring it back to myself, okay? The issue is that, yeah, I have my network, but now with COVID-19, the way I used to network,
it's very different.
It has changed. And I'm not good with technology. And I don't really like Zoom. You know, so then how do I reach out to these people and still maintain, you know, that friendship, that communication? So how do we evolve then, you know, to still keep in touch?
Yes.
But in this new environment, right? So I have friends who have been, you know, or, you know, network partners, let's call them, for the last, you know, who have been in my corporate part of my life for the last 20 years. But because we're all at home and we're no longer meeting up for lunch or coffee, that there is that distance, right? And I'm not sure Zoom replaces it adequately or does it in any way? Because it's kind of, I find Zoom a bit detached.
Yeah, networking, I believe, has really truly been suspended during this period. Although there are different forms of how you network. And this is why this article is pretty scientific. It really builds on the book from Marissa King, Social Chemistry, Decoding the Elements of Human Connection. And in the book, she highlights that there are three types of networks. You have one, the expansionists. They are go broad and establish a whole set of networks and all sorts of contacts. You have the conveners. They have small and quality relationships. They go deep. Or three, you have what you call brokers, where you link people from different network types. I suspect what you're talking about, Xiaoning, is that in this time, you're probably going to see a lot more depth in relationship. So those you know, you reconnect, you just build deeper networks. But I suspect we are just not broadening our relationships as much as we would like to.
It's very challenging because, you know, let's face it, in the old days, pre-COVID-19, the broadening of the network would be through your friend's friend, right?
Yeah.
Literally. So, you know, Mr. X would say, hey, come for lunch. I want you to meet Mr. Y. Or Miss C is coming. You know, why don't you meet her? She's, you know, she has an interesting job.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, do you want to have a
you
little chat with her?
Yeah.
How do you do that? It's much harder when it's like one step removed, right? I mean, you can still, the ones that you know today, you can do like a WhatsApp, you can do a Zoom, and the modern way of networking, sending people food. Right? Everybody's got like, you know, I love to send like tau fa or homemade cakes. That's my thing.
I'll give you my address, Johnny. I'll give you my address and tau fa, banana cake. Whatever, just bring it.
Yeah, but
bring
it's that way of like, you know, yeah. I still remember you. You're still in my mind, right? But how do you do this? How do you broaden it? I think these are all the challenges that we face. And the Zoom just doesn't cut it, you know, at the end of the day. A phone doesn't cut it. You know, I mean, like a WhatsApp doesn't cut it.
So just bringing it back, the book in the end does say that there are certain ways to improve networking, and it really just rely on old-fashioned concepts like courtesy and simple gestures, like a thank you and a smile. But Marissa does say there's one really important thing, which is don't be a jerk.
I think don't be a jerk is a general good rule advice. I would add to her tip, and I think the one thing that they don't like to say in corporate world, but I think is very true, is being sincere in all your friendships and relationships.
And so networking is a challenge because a lot of times people network insincerely.
Yeah, but if you're sincere, I think that networking will have depth and breadth also. Let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin, and to take us there is Radio Gaga by Queen. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. This is Xiaoning and I'm here with Philip on the morning run. And that was Hard to Explain by The Strokes, which pretty much sums up life. difficult to explain. Oh my God. It's true.
What I find really hard to explain are all the pardons that Trump made last night in the White House.
That is so true. That is so true. There were like a hodgepodge of them, right? I think that's the only way.
Yeah, rappers, Republican fundraisers. Of course, the traditional families and family-in-laws and all that got, you know, come added into the
wink,
mix.
Wink, wink, and you get your, you know, you get some time off from whatever, or basically you get forgiven. But anyway, yesterday, the now former, I love this. That's his new term. That's
the president formerly known as Trump.
Formerly. Well, now former President Donald Trump, he issued 73 pardons on his last night in the White House. And like you say, it's a hodgepodge. So I think one notable one, of course, is the former campaign chief and ex-White House advisor Steve Bannon, who was charged with swindling donors to a supposed effort to build a wall on the border with Mexico. And this is one related to Malaysia. Everything is connected to us in one way or another. It's Elliot Biodi, a major Republican fundraiser who pleaded guilty last fall to acting as an unregistered foreign agent. And apparently he's involved in 1MDB. And the rapper Lil Wayne, who pleaded guilty to a weapons charge last month. So you're right. It's everybody and anybody, including the kitchen sink.
Yes. 70 others had their criminal sentences commuted by Trump, although he did not pardon himself or any of his adult children. That I was a bit surprised.
Can you pardon yourself?
I forgive myself. But I wouldn't want to because...
I forgive myself for the crimes I may have committed. Yeah. That's what he's going to say,
if
right?
If you forgive yourself, you kind of rule yourself out for running for office later, I suspect.
Because, yeah, you would have then said that, yes, I'm guilty of something. Because how can you forgive something that you haven't done? Good one, Phil.
So even this was despite many speculations. The pardons were the third big group of grants of executive clemency issued by Trump since his election loss in November. The gallery of rogues that were pardoned
were huge. I like that gallery. There's enough of them.
It's a lot. There's the former campaign manager Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, his political operative, Charles Kushner, Ivanka Trump's father-in-law, and George Papadopoulos, his former campaign advisor.
And presidential pardons only apply to convictions for federal crimes. Presidents do not have the power to apparently pardon people for state crimes. But when you look at this list, you're like, it's all his BFFs at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, his network.
How does he keep in touch with them? Does he send them cakes Zoom. Or tau fa or Zoom? But in the meantime, someone else has popped up after being kind of mysteriously absent for at least 2-3 months. And that, of course, is the Alibaba founder, Jack Ma. Now, he emerged after weeks out of the spotlight, sparking speculations of his whereabouts as his companies, of course, have faced increased regulatory scrutiny. Now, I don't need to remind everybody, he was a darling, the absolute darling of markets because everybody was expecting Ant Financial to be listed, right? It was the big IPO of the year.
Until end October last year.
Yeah, and then everything just came crashing down at the very, I would say, almost at the very last minute. And just to put things into context, how big this Ant Financial listing was, it caused a shortage of Hong Kong dollars because everybody was, you know, shoring up Hong Kong dollars in anticipation of participating in that IPO, which didn't happen. But the fact that he emerged out of nowhere after months actually caused his stock in Alibaba, the counter listed in Hong Kong, to be up over 8% on the news of his appearance.
His reappearance and the context of the reappearance is also interesting. It was a video posted on Chinese social media and he was addressing rural teachers as part of one of his charity foundation's initiatives. So this is, as you said, the back of that whole pulling the plug by the Chinese regulators with N-Record. But a source told CNBC this month that he was just laying low. So there was a lot of speculation whether he was sent to a certain camp or location. But I think he was just lying low. That's what we are being
but
told.
It's not unusual, you know, when, okay, I mean, it's not fair to compare him with other people. I mean, he's his own, like, I would say, financial rock star, right? Corporate rock star. But bringing this back to how what happens in China, I mean, there was a famous actress, Fan Bingbing.
Yes.
And when she was charged, I think, or allegedly, or I think she was eventually charged over some, I think, tax allegations, she too disappeared from the public eye for months before reappearing. So it seems to be pretty much a pattern when you're a Chinese national and the government kind of frowns on you a little bit. So you just go away, quietly hide, keep lie low, and then I don't know what is the signal, and suddenly you're allowed to re-emerge.
Perhaps there's some algorithm about your personality occupying how much of the social mind space or media versus how the country is being occupying that space. And if you hear a certain percentage, it's like, okay, red alert, power and then down, they,
okay,
pair back.
Yeah, maybe. Because at the end of the day, when you're talking about China, there's only one party and there's the Communist Party that reigns supreme, right? But moving very quickly to Germany. Because it's a, you know, Germany, we always see it as this bastion of efficiency, right?
Yes.
It's like this powerhouse of industrialization, well known for its automobiles. And then, on the other hand, its vaccination program is causing frustration and concern among countries' lawmakers and health professionals because they originally targeted 300 inoculations a day for the COVID-19 vaccine, which the country, unfortunately, has so far failed to hit. So an estimated only 62,000 vaccinations were carried out in the last 24 hours, one-fifth of the target.
Very un-German for this kind of progress. And if you contrast it with UK, where their inoculations are at nearly 400,000 a day, this is pretty embarrassing for the Germans. I think it's embarrassing on many levels. Firstly, as a champion of the EU project, this is really a slap in the face to show the EU bureaucracy coming through. That's one. Secondly, BioNTech is a German drug maker that co-developed the vaccine and you can't even sort yourself out back home. And thirdly, Germans are just known for efficiency and this whole farce is just embarrassing.
Where's Angela? That's
Where's
my question.
Angela? Yeah.
Yeah. But let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our newspapers. Don't go away, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Shanling with Philip C and this is The Morning Run. And that was Ain't That a Shame by Fats Domino. And it's currently 6:50 in the morning, Thursday, the 21st of January. And as usual, at this time of the day, we're taking a look at some of the local news stories this morning. So I have the H Daily in front of me. And it's a bit dry, but somewhat relevant. And it's the article saying that court companies must be delisted once winding order is served. And this is based on Bursa Malaysia listing rules. And it's actually a landmark ruling because it makes it clear that a delisting is mandatory and the exchange does not have the discretion to maintain the company's listing status. So whether we'll see more and more companies actually suddenly disappearing from KLSE, from Bursa Malaysia, probably likely because now it's clarified.
So prior to this, it was always at the indulgence of SC?
I'm not sure whether there was
process.
some appeal process and then the whole thing just kind of dragged on for a very long time. Yeah. So the decision today, does not give Bursa Malaysia, like I said earlier, the option of allowing this. Once the winding order has been made, it applies to all listed companies and they will not be given time to look for any white knight to regularize their accounts. So this means basically you got to get your accounts in order ASAP. Don't allow a winding order to kind of be served because otherwise you will be delisted.
Pretty landmark deal, actually.
Very much so. But what's in front of you?
Well, on a more lighter or maybe not note, on the Malaysian Reserve, on page 4, ministers should work harder during emergency.
They should be working
24 hours a day, no?
They should be working hard, full stop. Considering how much they are paid, by the way.
Yeah, so the newspaper asserts that before the emergency, a number of ministers were too preoccupied with internal party matters that in a way took away their full attention on their ministerial position. So now, because of emergency, there's no more distraction, so there's no excuse for non-performance.
I'm just trying to figure this out for a moment because I would think that you're a minister. Your priority is your ministerial portfolio, not internal politics. And if internal politics was so urgent, then maybe you shouldn't be a minister.
My take is perhaps sometimes better not to say anything or do anything. So just be strategic, smart, and do what you need to do to get it right. You don't need to work very long hours.
Yeah, sometimes, true.
Sometimes.
But in the meantime, it might have not, some people might not have noticed, but Selangor actually announced their own 73.87 million aid package. And it's called Package Kita Selangor. And it's supposed to help those affected by the second round of the movement control order, which of course was enforced on January 13. So this was announced by their Menteri Besar. And if I'm not wrong, they're also going to be cutting some of their pay.
This is, I think, an extension of the conversation had news yesterday where Selangor was going to purchase its own vaccines. So states are beginning to even have more autonomy in providing support and driving this whole COVID relief solution already at decentralized level. And it's an interesting development here.
Yeah, I mean, Selangor's not the only one. Sarawak has already done so, right? Yep. And I'm wondering whether other states will follow suit. But, you know, I do know that when it comes to the vaccination program, it's not done in a silo because Selangor did have this conversation with the federal government.
Yes.
And I think this is very important. And, you know, even though we're in a state of emergency, what is slightly different is all the Menteri Besars remain. The state government still function. And of course, that communication between federal and state is key, right? It's key in kind of really flattening that pandemic curve. Because you cannot work independently. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, this coordination is super critical. And if you contrast the difference with the US, so here in Malaysia, the federal government has taken the lead and now you're seeing state government step in. And so that coordination is core. It's the reverse in the US, actually, where they've decentralized the vaccine program by state. But the Biden $1.8 trillion USD actually talks about federal infrastructure at the respective states to wrap around the current state vaccination programs.
Well, it makes sense because I think COVID-19 has really laid bare the gaps in the US healthcare system, right? It's such an ironic place. It's like richest country in the world, but there are clearly a lot of people still not protected. They don't have national health insurance. And if you don't, you know, you're really stuck, you know, in terms of your access to healthcare. You would think it would be a basic right, but it's actually not. So I think there are concerns about that. And also, like you said, even the vaccine rollout. So like Florida, they're attracting vaccine tourism, you know, because there are some Canadians who are flying there to get it because they don't have a program in place. And then in other states, there's a fight between the governor as to who is the priority. So they don't have a nationwide program. So maybe in a way, you know, there were inadequacies in terms of the UK national health system. But the fact that they've vaccinated so many people, every day 400,000, because there's a centralized system, sometimes it works in your favour.
Yeah. And so this is where I'm quite intrigued to find that the way we execute the lockdowns and MCOs, perhaps it's very effective when it's decentralized and localized. But on the flip side, the vaccination program requires a more centralized, coordinated approach. And I'm wondering whether that's the way we are looking at it, where you actually have to shift your approach.
Yeah.
And so the countries that are doing very well in driving the vaccinations are actually those that are struggling actually to contain the cases as well.
Yeah, but I think you need to be flexible. But very quickly, school's in session and we hope those students who are going back, who are sitting for SPM,
good luck and stay
safe. But that's all from the local papers this morning. That was your own advice, is it?
Yes.
Coming up next is 7 a.m. News Bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Tony Nash to find out where global markets are heading. But first, here's I Feel It All by The Feist. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.